Scene 16, Sara Vaskovic, 6:20 p.m. We both took time out to wash up, both literally and euphemistically, and then there was some discussion as to where we might eat. We decided on a small Armenian place I knew, one with booths, and one that was not likely to be crowded on a Tuesday evening, and it was close enough to walk to, and somehow I felt like walking. It was one of those pleasant evenings when you're not aware of the atmosphere. It is so perfectly suited to human requirements. The air was neither too warm nor too cold, nor too damp nor too dry. It wasn't so still that the layer next to the skin grew warm and moist, nor was it moving briskly enough to be annoying. There was even a fresh smell from the park that one could detect in the interstices left by the automobile exhaust. The sun was on our backs as we walked, pleasantly warm and lending the streets a brilliance. We didn't even mind the traffic. Sara seemed in a good humor, almost light-hearted. If she had been wearing sensible shoes, she might have skipped. I think she was relieved to have told the details of that difficult morning and to have gotten rid of its fester. As for me, I had a little less to be thankful for. I had now traced Giles from the moment I had left him on Sunday night to a time 2 hours before I had found him. And I had nothing. There was nothing that would account for what must have happened in that 2 hour hiatus. I couldn't say who had murdered him or why. Worse yet, I had no idea at all as to what to do next. Yes, I did. I was going to have dinner with Sara Vaskovic, something that I would have considered utterly unlikely as recently as lunchtime. Our shadows stretched before us as we crossed the avenue, the lights permitting, in a leisurely stroll. For a moment, they seemed strange, distorted, and unnatural to me, and then I realized why. My shadow was longer than hers. For that matter, her arm resting in my elbow exerted the faintest pressure downward instead of upward. It was an odd feeling and rather exciting. "You know," she said, when we were finally seated opposite each other over the wooden table in one of the alcoves to the rear of the restaurant, "I'm grateful to you for inviting me here and taking my mind off the ad campaign. I want you to know that. I'm so tired of it. Tomorrow we make the final decisions, no matter what, and then I take off for a week, and that will be a pleasure." "Where will you go?" "I'm not sure. But then I might just stay at home and sleep all day, every day, or watch television. Why do I have to go somewhere?" "I suppose you don't have to, but everyone does." "I know. It's the mark of the mobile society," she said. "We all go somewhere, in automobiles or planes or ships maybe, with oil burning and with churning, churning. We go there and they come here. Hotels couldn't survive otherwise." "I know, and it bothers me sometimes. So many of us live at the expense of high-energy bustling. What happens when the energy for the bustle runs out?" So we talked doomsday for a while. Then, over the stuffed grape leaves and salad, we talked natural foods. I've lost track of what we talked about, except that the ball kept bouncing back and forth briskly, never went out of bounds, never hit the net, never got lost in the underbrush. I found out about her early life. Her father was a government official in her homeland, and he had fallen out of favor under conditions where such a fall meant prison or worse. Fortunately, he got out with her, and they made it to the United States. That was 10 years ago, and he had died since. She had married soon after arriving here, too soon, and it hadn't worked, except for producing a son. "I knew English when I came," she said. "It was to be my profession, and I was going to be an English teacher. I love the language, it just seems to fit me. I used to think I spoke it perfectly, but here everyone can tell at once I am European." "You speak it too perfectly," I said. "Can you still speak your native language?" She laughed and spoke rapidly in something that sounded Slavic. I tried to repeat a few words, and we went back and forth over the moussaka. She said, "You're not a linguist." "I know that," I said. "It's all I can do to handle English. My copy readers weep over my manuscripts." "What was it that I was trying to say in that gibberish you were making me repeat?"
"You ask too many questions."
"Oh, come on, it's only natural for me to want to know."
"No, no, that's what we were saying. The words you repeated meant, you ask too many questions."
She asked questions, too, just the same, and I spoke an incredible deal of nonsense over the baklava and coffee about how I had gotten started as a writer.
And then, unaccountably, her fires seemed to sink, and a frown like a cloud came over her face. I said, "What's the matter, dear?" The dear slipped out unintentionally. I was feeling friendly. She shivered a little. "I don't know. I'm beginning to see things."
"What things?"
"I think it's because I was telling you I had seen that flash of movement when I left Mr. DeVore's room. It seems to have put me into a melodramatic mood."
It was the first time that Giles had been mentioned since we had entered the restaurant, and I felt his unseen presence come gritting down over the smooth evening sunshine that had seemed to fill the meal.
"Well, what? Put a name to it."
"When we were walking here, it seemed to me that someone was following us."
"Following us? I didn't see anything."
"You weren't watching."
"Well, neither was I, but I saw a man."
"There were thousands of men all about us."
"I saw him several times, always somehow near us, but not too near. And then just now, he came into the restaurant."
I turned, of course, for my back was toward the door, and she said,
"He's gone. He only came in for a moment, as though to make sure we were still here."
"Did you recognize him?"
"He was a complete stranger."
"Was he the same man you saw in the street?"
"I can't be sure. I just had a glimpse. But why should anyone just come in and leave? The man just looked around and left."
I looked up at the clock on the wall over our heads. I pointed and said, "He drifted in to check the time, and he wasn't the same man who was in the street, and the man in the street wasn't following us. And besides, you need fear nothing when you're with me. Don't let my size fool you. I tell you what, let's take a walk. It's not late at all." She smiled.
"Where shall we walk? Let me guess. To your apartment?"
I felt myself flush, for of course my apartment was within walking distance. I said, "Innocent, Your Honor. If you were to beg to come to my place, I wouldn't refuse you, but my word of honor, I have nothing evil in mind."
"It depends on how Darius Just defines evil," she muttered.
"I have a walk in mind," I said, "an honest-to-God walk along the side of the park in the fading twilight. I am suggesting a walk through beauty. It's just 2 days after full moon, and in the clarity of tonight's evening air, we will see it rise nice and fat and orange over the park. And when we're through, if you live anywhere within 10 miles, I will take you home by taxi, or if you'd rather, I'll put you into a taxi and pay off the driver in advance."
"Goodness," she said, "you block off all reasonable paths to a kind refusal. What if I tell you I think I'm coming down with a headache?"
"Then I'll tell you that the smell of the fresh spring foliage from the park will prove a sovereign cure."
"Then that's it. By all means, let's take a walk, Darius."
The waiter had brought back my credit card, and I carefully computed the tip, and we were out.